We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Assistant head coach, special teams coordinator, tight ends coach. You've got a lot of titles.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing sometimes.
I mean, it's a lot of responsibility. They can't fire you. There's too many things to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope that's right.
I also found out that when we had Kevin Lynch on a couple of weeks ago, you're also next in command if, heaven forbid, something should happen and Mike New gets Nick Saban'd. Lofty responsibility on your shoulders in a time of COVID-19.
Yeah. No, it's interesting what this whole situation's made you, the scenarios it's made you go through in your head and think about in terms of if this coach is gone or that coach is gone or this player's gone or that player's gone relative to, you know, contact tracing or testing or whatever it might be. It's really been an interesting discussion to have on a lot of different levels. So a lot of different responsibilities for a lot of different guys. So everybody's kind of, getting ready for all those different pieces that they might have to pick up.
Take me through those discussions a little bit. Like, what is it like for you guys? And how do you divvy up? Like, all right, here's contingency A, here's contingency B. All right, if this is the case, we do that. How much time and energy has that absorbed from you guys that you wouldn't otherwise have to worry about?
Well, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, this whole situation, between making different schedules, between making different plans, if this happens or that happens, and then a lot, you know, the situation changing and you make a new plan, it's just, I've never spent more time making plans that never end up coming to fruition. So we definitely have spent, you know, a good amount of time talking about, you know, both on sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, and special teams wise, if this happens, how we'll handle it, or that happens, how we'll handle it. But it's just, the situation is obviously so unique and it has definitely taken up a lot of time just talking about the plan that goes into everything on a daily basis, for sure.
What's the assistant head coach do?
For a lot of things, you know, stuff that maybe Coach New just is too busy to kind of deal with, to be quite honest. So, I mean, if there's something that, you know, and it's been great for me, like administratively, if there's a couple things I can take off his plate that frees him up to do something that might be, you know, a little bit bigger picture, and I can kind of handle something maybe a little smaller off to the side that he doesn't really need to occupy his time with, you know, that's great. Some of it's been just doing some different stuff with alumni. Some of it's been doing different stuff with, leadership development on the team, things that things that, you know, I like doing and things that, you know, it's good for me to kind of learn. And, you know, I've been very lucky here to, between, you know, tight ends and recruiting coordinator and special teams coordinator, now this, to kind of wear a bunch of different hats. And it's good just to see the administrative side of things and just some of the things that go into the day-to-day jobs that you might, the day-to-day job of being a head coach that sometimes you just don't think about because you get so tied up in your own little world of what you're doing that, you know, the big picture things that go into being a head coach are it's pretty interesting.
I know you love being at Ball State. I know you love it here in Muncie. You've been here for almost, well, the better part of the last decade. But I mean, like, we'll pull the curtain back a little bit. Like, obviously, at some point in your career, you would like to be the head coach somewhere else, or here. But you'd love to be a head coach. Do you feel like being the assistant head coach, like, the progress for you just professionally? Has it prepared you in a different way with those responsibilities, or have you seen things since you've taken on that role that maybe you didn't expect or anticipate? And there's just things about being a head coach that you're like, oh, okay, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, you know, I think every job kind of prepares you a little bit differently to maybe one day be a head coach, you know what I mean? Whether it was as a recruiting coordinator dealing with, you know, roster numbers and scholarship allocation and travel and where people are going and how you're doing that. And obviously special teams, you know, outside of really the head coach, you spend more time with the whole team than really anybody else. You know, you're the only person that talks to the offense, the defense, as well as the specialists so, you know, and having to manage a lot of different things and a lot of different moving parts, you know, I think that's part of it. And then, you know, the assistant head coach title, I think, like I said, it's been good from a, all right, you know, macroscopically, like looking at, all right, this schedule or that schedule, or what do we want to do here? How do we want to handle, you know, practice today schedule-wise? What do we want to do as far as leadership development? What do we want to do in terms of alumni engagement? So I think each job that I've kind of been fortunate enough to, or each role I've been fortunate enough to have here has kind of prepared me for hopefully one day to get an opportunity to be a head coach. You know, that's something that I'd really like to do. And you know, I think, you know, especially, you know, I like you said, I mean, it's something that is a goal of mine, you know, that, and I think having the title of assistant head coach definitely has helped me a little bit just in terms of the administrative things that I might not have gotten involved in if I was just doing, you know, special teams or tight ends, you know, specifically.
He's Pat Doherty, Ball State Football's assistant head coach, special teams coordinator, tight ends coach as well. It's Monday night with the red and white here at McAllister's Deli on McGalliard. Ball State getting set for its November 4th opener with Miami. You went to Ohio Dominican. Then you went to Defiance for 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
From there, you went to Lindsey Wilson. I don't know where that is.
Yeah, it's in Columbia, Kentucky. So okay. It's obviously we've been to Bowling Green to play Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's about 45 minutes east of Bowling Green.
Okay. Yep. So you've graduated. You get your master's at Defiance.
Yep.
And this is where just like I'm always curious about people's career paths. You already have an advanced degree. You've had two jobs at two different locations. And you go, all right, I'm going to be a graduate assistant at Ball State. Take me through the process of how you make the decision of like, all right, well, I've already got a master's, but I'll go back to school again. I'll make probably nothing. But this is the right move because it will set me up to obviously be where you are now.
Right. Well, you know, it's, I was very lucky and, you know, to have the opportunity to come here as a graduate assistant, you know, really kind of how that transpired was, when I was the D-line coach at Defiance College, the offensive line coach at the time was Nick Tabaka, who, you know, was a captain here and later was the offensive line coach. So he had an open GA job to be his offensive line GA, and we'd already worked together. And like you said, I was down at Lindsey Wilson College at the time, and oddly enough, I had just gotten offered another full-time job at another institution that I was kind of, you know, getting ready to take and was, you know, for obviously more money than a GA makes. You know, I kind of looked at it as, you know, my goal was to have an opportunity to coach Division I football, it was an opportunity to do that, and I felt really strong at the time that there were, you know, a lot of good things happening here at Ball State, people I could learn from, you know, and it's been, you know, the best decision, one of the best decisions I've made to come and take that opportunity, and I learned a ton from Nick and everybody that was on that staff, and now same thing with Coach New's staff. So it's been great to see, you know, we get an opportunity to work with a bunch of different people, and, you know, really glad that I took that opportunity when it came up.
How big a deal was that just to be around Division I? you know, I feel like in broadcasting that happens a lot too, where people like, hey, I just want to be at a Division I institution.
Right, right.
And there's layers within that too. It's like, hey, I just want to be around a Power 5 school. Or I just want to be around an FBS school. How big a deal was it, and how different for you was it between, hey, just let me go be a GA at a Division I school and absorb it in this way versus maybe being a little bit up the food chain but at a smaller school in a smaller place?
Right. Well, you know, I think first off, you know, I think coaching small college football is the best thing that anybody that coaches football can do, because it teaches you how to do a lot of different things. Like, to me, the biggest thing that changes as you move up the, you know, proverbial food chain of going from Division II to Division – or Division III, Division II, Division I is you have more people working there, so your job becomes more specific.
Yeah, Justin Lustig was doing the laundry while he was the head coach at Edinburgh.
Exactly. You know, so when I was at Defiance, I was the assistant strength coach. I was the academic coordinator. I was – you know, going, taking master's classes and having my own recruiting area. And so I learned how to do a ton of different things, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, I think that really prepared me that when I got to the opportunity at Ball State, you know, I had already done so many things that I was kind of able to hit the ground running, and it was a smaller role, but it was, you know, in terms of, I shouldn't say a smaller role, it was a more specific role, you know, what I was being asked to. I wasn't asked to do laundry anymore. I wasn't being asked to go help in the weight room with the strength and conditioning program and run four different lifts a day. You know, so, you know, I was able to focus more on just doing football, which ultimately I think, you know, is what you want to do. You know, I mean, I was able to focus on, you know, being around the players more, different things like that, because you're not tied up with a lot of other, you know, for lack of a better term, auxiliary jobs, you know. Sure. So, but I tell everybody this, that I think coaching in small college football, you know, is the best thing. It will make you a better coach. There's no question about it, because you just have to do so much, and, you know, you don't have – there's not somebody else to do this. You have to do it. So that was a great learning experience, and something I'm, you know, very grateful for.
You've experienced it on both ends, though, because not only have you been at a very small college level, you've also coached in the Power 5 for a year. You were a GA here. You left for a year to go be a quality control coach at Northwestern before coming back. What did having that perspective do for you? Not just to see it at the smallest of levels, but then to go to the Big Ten and spend a year where you have every resource, and how that changes the way you look at things and the way you do things.
You know, I'll say this, from whether it's Defiance College or Lindsey Wilson or Northwestern, you know, I think what you do as a football coach really doesn't change. You know, like the day-to-day of, you know, we're getting ready, this is what we do on a Tuesday, this is what we do on a Wednesday, et cetera, that part of it doesn't change. What it probably opened my eyes to more than anything else was, you know, just – you know, how I think the biggest difference was the commitment level from probably a little bit from a player's perspective of, I mean, you know, the guys at Ball State or Northwestern, like, their dream was to play in the NFL,
right,
most of them. And for some of them, that was realistically attainable, where, you know, we weren't going to have a bunch of NFL guys necessarily at Defiance College or Lindsey Wilson. They were, you know, great kids and hard workers and good football players, but that their football career was going to be over there. So I think just the commitment level to perfecting their craft and kind of working around, you know, I guess, elite people in their field was eye-opening, just to see how hard they worked and the level of commitment they put in on outside of just practice and things that were required. I think that was an eye-opener both here and at Northwestern. And, you know, I think the other thing that's, you know, obviously an eye-opener is, you know, going in and, you know, you go from playing at Lindsey Wilson College or Defiance, and sometimes there might be, you know, 500,000 fans there, and then you walk out to, you know, play a game at, you know, Nebraska or Wisconsin. It's a little different. So that part of it.
There's 5,000 fans there too.
Yeah.
In a section.
Yeah, no, it's cool. You know what I mean? Like that experience is cool. I'm not going to lie about that. Like walking in, and, or, you know, when I was there, we were lucky enough to play Ohio State on game day, college game day, came to Evanston. Like that, those are cool experiences that are special. But the nuts and bolts of coaching football, to me, don't change regardless where you're at. You know, you're there trying to help, you know, young men be the best they can be on and off the field. And, you know, you don't really change how you go about what you do. You know, just where you're at kind of changes a little bit. And so maybe your role inside of that.
College game day comes to Evanston. What's that like?
It was neat. It was a neat experience. You know, we were at the time we were 4-0 and Ohio State was 4-0 and we were both, I think Ohio State was 2 or 3 in the country, and we were like, you know, top 15 or something like that. And it was a great, it was cool. It was a cool experience just to, to go through that and seeing, you know, Lee Corso and Kirk Herbstreit walking down the hallway at the facility. I mean, yeah, it was neat. It was a neat.
And
deal.
you guys were 5-0 afterward, right?
No, we actually we lost it at the end there. We had a lead, I think, going into the fourth quarter and couldn't hang on, but it was a great game. It was a great game.
Let's talk about you as a player a little bit. Yeah. You played at Ohio Dominican. I knew that. I didn't know what your career was like.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot with Walt Fletcher last year about, like, he fit in this program because he had turned things around at Edinburgh. They went from never winning a game to being, like, a 9-win team. I was unaware that you guys went from 0-10 as a freshman in your collegiate career to, I think, 11-2 your senior season.
11-1. 11-1. We lost one game. We lost in the playoffs.
What's that like? What was the process of? Did you commit there, knowing like, hey, we're going to build this thing up, and we're going to be part of the change? Like, take me inside the mindset of being a player in a situation that is not dissimilar to what you're at now as a coach, trying to build something up.
I think in part, and you know, this might sound crazy, but part of the reason I went to Ohio Dominican originally out of high school was I knew I wanted to coach football. This is what I wanted to do. And I thought it'd be awesome to get a chance to see a program get built from the ground up. So my freshman year was the first year of the program. And,
oh, was it really?
Yeah. So
okay.
They started football that year. So we were awful, and and we got I don't know if we were within 20 points in a single game that first year, and I didn't play at all, and I didn't travel,
but everything was brand new, so that was nice.
Well, it was brand new, but you know, they were building, so the locker rooms were trailers, so they were literally portable trailers. So you know, there were lots of drawings of things that were getting built that you know, they showed you when we originally started talking. But
that sounds very familiar to how things work in a lot of areas.
A lot of places, right? Yeah. So, but it was a very cool experience, you know, coming in. And I always tell people, you know, my freshman year, I think we had 120 freshmen on the roster. And by the time I finished 4 years later, there were 26 of those guys still left that stuck around and played all 4 years.
That's cool.
It was a really cool experience kind of going. I think we went 0-10, 4-6, 7-3, and then 11-1. So just the kind of gradual build to that was really cool to be a part of. And like you said, you know, definitely something that, you know, we're hoping to continue to do here, just kind of a gradual build and then sustain. So
what's it like being recruited by a school that doesn't have a football team?
I wish I could tell you I was highly recruited, but I wasn't. So I was recruiting schools as hard as they were recruiting, or harder than they were recruiting me. It was cool. You know, I mean, it was like, all right, you know, now being an 18-year-old kid, I thought, oh, well, I'll definitely come in here and start and play right away because there's no upperclassmen. I'll be the best guy. And, you know, I quickly found out I wasn't, but it was a great experience for me because I got to learn, most guys, when they go to college and go play college football, they're not used to not being a starter or not being one of the better players. And that's most people's experience. And I got there and I wasn't. And, you know, I learned a lot about how to stick through some hard times. And, you know, I could have walked away when we were 0-10 and I wasn't playing and whatever. And I'm, you know, very grateful to this day that I stuck it out and you know, very grateful for all the experiences I had there. It was awesome.
You talked about wanting to go there because you thought it would be cool to see something built up from the ground up.
Yeah.
What did you learn in that respect about building a program from the ground up in the most organic of fashions?
Yeah, I think one of the things I definitely learned was just being uncompromising in what you believe in as a program. You know, I think at times you saw like some kids that might have been better players, but there weren't seniors, there weren't leaders, there weren't people that could tell you, hey, this isn't how we do it, this is how you do it. Like literally from this is how we take the field to this is how we stretch to the complete ground up on it was interesting. I was very lucky too that I got to do that at Lindsey Wilson. My first year at Lindsey Wilson as a coach was the first year in program history. So I got to do it as a player.
You're
and
a
as
magnet
a,
for
as
these
a coach.
Things, yeah.
Yeah. So it was really pretty cool. And then to kind of get to do that piece of it where, you know, from everything from, you know, designing the locker room to, all right, where are you going to put an equipment shed? Or they're building the stadium, and it's like, okay,
So you had trailers at Lindsey Wilson too?
No, they built. Oh, okay. They did a lot better there.
Okay,
they did a lot better there.
It's like it took you like 9 years to get an office.
No, Lindsey Wilson did a fantastic job with how they built the program. The stadium was beautiful. The facilities were unbelievable. So it was, and you know, just connections again. The guy that was the head coach there, still the head coach there, Chris Oliver, was the one who recruited me to Ohio Dominican. So that was how I ended up there. But yeah, I got to see two programs get built up into both national contenders now at the NAI level. Well, and Lindsey Wilson at NAI level and Ohio Dominican Division II. But really, really cool. So I learned so many things. It'd be hard to, I could probably write a book on them.
What clicked? Like you said, you stuck with it. You hung through all of everything that you guys go through. There's only 26, 27 of you left
right.
from that initial class by the end of it. I mean, it could have been 5-5. Why was it 11-2, 11-1?
Well, I mean, I think the number one. I mean, you know, when we did have a good amount of seniors at that point, and the guys that stuck around were committed, obviously, because they stuck through some pretty hard times, you know, and when you invest that much and you got through some hard times, you know, when you actually now have some experience and some more talent, you know, just because there's a big difference between when you're an 18-year-old freshman and a 22-year-old senior, like just the physical maturation that occurs between that 4-year or 5-year for some guys span is a big deal. So, you know, went from going out there and getting pushed around to pushing people around. I mean, so some of it was just people just got better. We just got sure. became better, more talented. And then, you know, the other part of it was, you know, you got a lot of experience because you were out there playing for 3 years. So, I mean, they're really, by the time you hit your senior year playing football, like a lot like our guys here now, like some of these guys have played, some of these guys are going to play 48 or more games
start.
In their college, start 48 games in their college career. You know, that's invaluable. You can't, there's nothing you can do to replace that experience. So I think that in and of itself, you know, just you'd seen just about everything. So then when it came up, it was like, okay, I know what to do here and how to handle this. And so I think it was a culmination of a lot of things, talent, experience, and then just, you know, obviously like on every team, a bond of, you know, people that, you know, like being around each other and working together and kind of been through some ups and downs together, that pays its dividends for sure.
Ohio Dominican, obviously one of a couple of football teams collegiately in the city of Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Would you ever like go out socially and be like, yeah, I'm a college football player, and just let somebody else fill in the blanks and roll with it?
Well, I don't look like somebody that plays at Ohio State, so they might have said, oh, where do you play, at Otterbein or Capital or somewhere else? But I never got mistaken for an Ohio State football player, that's for sure.
My favorite tweet, I think, of all time is Aaron Hepp. Once said that he goes, the fact that Jerry Jeudy and I played the same position at the same level of college football is just a remarkable fact.
No question. So, no, it was you definitely were overshadowed there a little bit. Nobody, you know, I always thought it was funny we would play our games. What if Ohio State played at noon, we would play at 3:30, or if they played at night,
a doubleheader.
You know, yeah, like, well, we're going to get more people there now. Like, no, that was not the case. But yeah, no, I never had that issue of being mistaken for James Laurinaitis or anything.
Special teams coordinator, tight ends coach, also your roles on this team. So I want to touch on a couple of those areas. First and foremost, on the special team side, because for the second time in as many years, you guys have an open kicking job. Mm-hmm. Ryan Rimmler did a really nice job for you last year, but he has since graduated. So tell me a little bit about what you've got going on with Jacob Lewis and Jack Knight and what that competition could look like in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, really it was, three guys really kind of battling between Jake Chinot, Jack
yeah.
Knight, and Jacob Lewis. Jake's had a little bit of a, you know, quad issue kind of going on. But, you know, it's been a nice battle between all three of those guys. And they all have some things that they do probably a little bit better than one another, you know, relative to kickoffs, field goals, et cetera. But all very, very talented and unbelievable kids. So it's been really good to see those guys kind of battle and compete. And, you know, the nice part about the specialist position too is they're competing, but they're also helping each other and kind of cheering each other on. And they all want to see each other succeed as much as they, you know, obviously want to win the starting job for themselves. So it's been a really good group to work with. And both Jack and Jacob, obviously being Jack being a redshirt freshman and Jacob being a true freshman, have
for another 2 years.
Yeah, for 2 years, right? They both have really, really bright futures. So, Jake's obviously, older, being a redshirt junior, but both those young guys have really, really, really bright futures. So,
do you know in your mind what direction you think that could go, or is it still pretty open?
Yeah, I think that
you don't have to tell me.
No, I think I think what's great right now is just kind of the way we're practicing, kind of. Getting them in some more live situations where they're, having to come on the field and kick in the middle of practice, sure. like after a series of plays, in front of the whole team, doing that, like, more so than just, you know, sometimes at practice you'll have a field goal period where you a kicker might hit six or seven balls in a row. That's not as realistic as what we're doing right now in practice. And I think this is going to hopefully, you know, kind of, you know, separate one or two of them from the other. So it's we should hopefully know a lot more here after, I would say, probably the next week to 10 days. Yeah.
Nathan Snyder is obviously your punter still. He's a returner for you guys, but you've got an heir apparent in the program now. How much Australian slang have you learned from Lucas Borough?
A few things. After he got here and went through his isolation protocol and all that, we went out to lunch the day he got out of here, and we sat down, and after the meal was over, he said, "Do you leave him a tip, or how do you do?" So we're just going through the difference in cultures of tipping at restaurants and how you order and different things like that. He was amazed at pickle chips. He never had, fried pickles before. So, no, there's definitely some things that going into any culture, a little different. But he's awesome and has picked up on, you know, the guys all like him a lot. He's an easy, likable young man. And super excited to have him here.
I'm going to butcher this, but it's like it's always cool when you walk down the sideline at practice and I'm not really paying attention. I'm just like looking out of the field. You see what's up, mate?
Yeah, cheers. Cheers and mate. There's a few terms he'll throw out there. Once heaps. He likes to say heaps.
What does that mean?
Like a lot of. So he said heaps of squirrels. He saw heaps of squirrels the other day. He had never seen a squirrel before he got here. So that was like he couldn't believe all the squirrels running around campus.
You didn't even think about the fact that you would never see that.
No, no doubt.
Now, granted, I've never seen a kangaroo, and to him that's probably second nature.
Yeah,
probably both stereotypically and quite literally.
Yes, so very, very different. But, heaps and cheers and mate, those would be three terms that probably get thrown out a little bit that would be a little different for a normal conversation on the football field.
There's great slang in that language.
Yeah.
Outside of kicking, you're also the tight ends coach. Mentioned that. You've got a new tight end, Dylan Cook. You've got an old new tight end, a new old tight end, a new what's old is new again. Right. He came here as a tight end. You moved him to tackle. You undid the move in the off season, and all of a sudden he went from being like this great blocking tight end to like now he's got great hands.
Yeah.
He could be a really good pass catcher. What excites you about the personnel you have at tight end this year and how they fit into what you can do offensively?
Well, I think what's really cool about the tight end position right now is that we have a bunch of guys with a little bit different skill set.
Right. Cody Rudy.
Cody Rudy and a freshman, Ryan Lazan, Isaiah Dunnick. They're all a little bit different body types that kind of give you something a little bit different that hopefully, in our offense can create some mismatch problems for people and just doing some different things at different personnel groups that maybe we haven't done, but that's having Dylan back's been awesome. He hasn't missed a beat, and when we moved Dylan originally, it was never because he wasn't a good tight end. It was more, we needed some help shoring up some depth on the O-line. And at the time he was the, third tight end. And we're like, hey, you can go be maybe the next offensive lineman in, and you're a really good blocker. You do some of these things really well. He's got the longest arms on the team. He's 6'5", so he had some traits that, we kind of saw similar to, that of Danny Penner. Yeah, same thing with Danny. It wasn't like we moved Danny because he wasn't good at tight end. We just thought, hey, maybe this could be a good move for him. And then, obviously moving Dylan back has been awesome. So he hasn't missed a beat. And, I was surprised at how well he still remembered all the past game and some of that stuff. So, no, it's been great to have Dylan back.
Ryan Lazan, Jordan Guskey wrote a piece in the Star Press a while ago that he could be a Taysom Hill type.
Yeah.
He going to throw some passes in this offense?
Yeah, well, we'll see. He, obviously in high school played some quarterback, not your typical tight end body type per se, but he can kind of do a little bit of everything. So that's one of the nice things about Ryan. He's a good all-around football player, very versatile, very, very smart, has picked up the offense really well. So, excited to kind of see what he does. He's got a very bright future in the program for sure.
We got to get to Bryce here. Pat, I will let
you go.
He's
one of the best.
I know you've got I always do this. I'm like, hey, you can go home and eat dinner, but that's not true. You're going back to the office, aren't you?
Yeah, for a little bit. We got a couple of things to clean up for practice tomorrow. Yep.
Pat, appreciate the time, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.